From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Al Letson Reveals. And with this special little podcast, we're breaking away from the regular show, and every now and then, I'm going to have an in-depth conversation with somebody that I find interesting. This week, my guest is an outspoken Trump advisor.
So I'm Dr. Sebastian Gorka. I'm now the deputy assistant to President Trump in the Strategic Initiatives Group, and I specialize in national security issues and especially counterterrorism.
Sebastian Gorka is sent out by the White House to discuss threats usually outside of U.S. borders, but he's got strong views on domestic issues, too. Here's his take on the Women's March the day after Donald Trump was inaugurated.
Did you see the trash they left behind in D.C.? I live in D.C. It was disgusting.
Gorka thinks protests against Donald Trump are aimed in the wrong direction.
I'd like to see them demonstrating in downtown Chicago. I'd like to see them in Baltimore, not outside the White House, because it is the Democrat Party that has done the greatest damage to the people of America of color.
By bringing up the Democratic Party, it feels like the campaign hasn't stopped. Gorka talks a lot about the backbone of America, real Americans, and others who he dismisses as the chattering classes. I asked him who he means by that.
I think there's a small chunk of the chattering classes, maybe the liberal elites of the West Coast, the East Coast, certain media entities who haven't fully realized the true consequences of November the 8th and how the backbone of America, middle America, what the left derisively calls the flyover states, have spoken clearly. And it was in large part a national security election. And individuals voted to have Donald Trump become the commander-in-chief because they believed that he could secure them better. He could make America safer than Hillary Clinton. And that's the reality.
You brought up the backbone of America. And so tell me what states you're talking about in the backbone of America. Help me understand that, because I guess where my disconnect comes in is that I feel like the backbone of America is Americans all over the country.
Look, it's a fair question, but that's not the intent of my phraseology. So let's start with who isn't the backbone. The who isn't the backbone is the establishment. It's the people that I call derisively, and I do it consciously, the chattering classes, the members of the elite, the wealthy who weren't hurt by the policies of the last 8 years. That's who isn't the backbone. The backbone is of America is everybody else who's not a member of the establishment, not a member of the elite, people like myself who've seen their healthcare premiums and their deductibles double or triple thanks to Obamacare, people who feel that through the policies of the last 8 years, they've lost their jobs or their wages haven't increased, people who, as the president said, are the forgotten men and women. I don't care where they are geographically, but it's the people who have not done well at the trough of the elite in the last 8 years, right or left, it's everybody else.
But I would say respectfully that upper class that you're talking about, some of those people are now a part of Trump's cabinet. I mean, like
the no, they're the ones protesting on the streets. Oh my gosh, come on. It's the millennials. It's the entitled millennials. It's the pajama girls, the pajama boys.
Let's walk this through.
Okay.
So
okay.
We both feel comfortable with where we land on this. Let's mm-hmm. walk it through. Mm-hmm. You're saying that the chattering classes are the liberal elite.
Part of them, yeah.
And so if it's the elite, what I see in President Trump's cabinet are the elite. I mean, these people have more money than I could even imagine.
Okay, good question. It's not a function of how much money is in your bank account. Okay, that would be oversimplistic. For me, the real elite and the people whose lack of empathy for the rest of America really led to Mr. Trump's becoming president. You know, I'm in the meetings. I see these people who are coming in. I see the cabinet members. I see the people on the next tier down. These are people who are not interested as just, you know, making more money, business as usual. We recognize that the system is broken. They are there to serve the people. So for me, the real elite are the people for whom it doesn't matter who the president is, left or right, they're still going to make a lot of money. That's not who the Trump cabinet is. That's not who the Trump White House is. We are here to effect change so that all Americans, especially those outside the 1%, can live better.
you talked about empathy. And I would say that that goes both ways. I've spent a lot of time in these quote unquote flyover states. I've spent a lot of time in big cities as well. And I would say that there is definitely a place where both groups don't quite understand each other. But there's just as much a lack of empathy from these people that you would call the backbone of America for how people live in other places, as well as, you know, maybe there is a lack of empathy from people that live in these big coastal cities. But I think they're all Americans. And I don't think that you can, like, write off any part of the electorate. I think that we have to figure out ways to build bridges and make it work together.
I couldn't agree more. But you know what? You're not going to do it when you divide us up by skin color, by sexual orientation, and by class. And that's what the Democrat Party has done. They sow divisiveness because that's how they think they're going to stay in power. I want this nation to be united again, but I'm not going to do it by talking about what your skin color is, who you go to bed with, or who you voted for, or what class you came from. That way leads division, and I'm fed up of it.
I understand where you're coming from on it, but I think that the problem with it is when you look at the disparities in America and when you look at the treatment that different Americans get, it's based in those things. And so if we don't find a way to address racial disparity, if we don't find a way to address the way people are treated because of who they want to sleep with or because of the way they want to dress, and when I say dress, I'm talking about people who are trans and are either making a transition or, you know, have transitioned. I mean, you can look across the country and see how all of these groups are affected by either laws or by the way other Americans treat them. And so by saying, I'm not seeing race, I'm not seeing your sexuality, I'm not seeing your religion, you're like saying, like, I'm not seeing all the things that are like keeping society inequitable. When you look at economics, you can see that African Americans are still far behind their white counterparts.
But what's the cause for that? For as far as I'm concerned, it's not because of systematic oppression by the state. It's not because of the laws we had in the 1950s. It's not because of Jim Crow. The reality is, it is the other side, the side that lost, that has for 30 years kept black Americans down. You just look at where they run the country. Look at Baltimore. Look at Chicago. What have they done for the American people of color? What have they done for them? Nothing. They've made it worse. They've created a dependency culture that undermines the fabric of those communities and societies. And when we see those people with those political views on the streets demonstrating, you know what? I'd like to see them demonstrating in downtown Chicago. I'd like to see them in Baltimore, not outside the White House, because it is the Democrat Party that has done the greatest damage to the people of America of color.
Dr. Gorka, respectfully, I'm saying that the inequities that have been built into the American system are still there. When you look at the basic root of this country, the idea is that when white people came to America, there was an indigenous population here that basically was pushed out, destroyed, and shoved away. So that's one aspect of it. Then you bring Africans from Africa here to basically set up your economic powerhouse here. What I'm saying is that, like, in the structure of America, white supremacy is built in. It's not a thing of, like, the Democrats are great to black people and the Republicans are bad. It is a system that both parties operate in that has kept inequity in America.
Okay, so just two comments. I chose this country. I didn't come, I wasn't born by accident. I chose to be an American. And as such, as somebody who consciously chose to be a citizen of this great nation, I wholeheartedly reject your assertion that white supremacism is some foundational element of our society. Historically, it existed. But the my issue is this: how are you helping bridge the divisions by using phrases like white supremacism? Because white supremacism is a conscious decision. It's the individual who is denying the other their civil rights. Today, I do not see as a nation systemic persecution based on skin color.
What I would say is, one, you said that you chose this country. And I would say I didn't, and neither did my ancestors. Like, we were brought over here on a slave ship, And we were told, you have to work, you have to do this, and made an underclass citizen when we were first brought here. I'm not taking your immigrant story from you. Please don't take my story from me. The second thing is, I would say, is that, you know, when you say that white supremacy is a conscious thing, like, this is exactly where you and I go different directions, because I don't think that white supremacy is a conscious thing. I don't think that half the people that enact policies that speak to that are even thinking about white supremacy. What I'm saying is that we work in a system that is consistently taking African-American lives and putting them to the side. And I would say the reason why I bring it up is because for this country to realize its actual potential, you can't push people to the side. You can't have a system that values one group of people in one way and another group of people another way and doesn't rise everybody together. Diversity is a beautiful thing, because if I do well in America, you do well in America, and we do well together.
Diversity is a wonderful and beautiful thing, but only if you have shared values. If you don't, diversity for the sake of diversity is chaos.
So just generally, because you said diversity is great if you have shared values, do you feel like Muslims, whether they're Americans or not, don't have the same shared values as other Americans?
Depends who they are. If it's members of ISIS, no. If it's the Muslims that I've trained and worked with for the last 6 years in the Defense Department, absolutely. I trust them with my life. So it's like saying, you know, which individuals have my values? The question is, who are we talking about? Criminals, robbers, rapists? Are we talking about people who believe in, you know, equality of the sexes, equality of conscience, freedom of expression? Who are we talking about is the question. But the more you couch it in terms of subclasses and subcategories, the more I think you engender increased tension. I don't care who you sleep with. I care about you because you're made in the image of God. You deserve dignity as a human being. And as a result, I don't want to focus and obsess on history. I want to march forward together. And that's why I reject the stratification and the subcategorization of my fellow Americans. But let's continue that over coffee.
Let's do it. Dr. Gorka, thank you so much for coming in. I hope that you and I can talk again.
Anytime.
That's Sebastian Gorka, an advisor to President Donald Trump. His specialty is external threats to national security, but as you can hear, he holds some pretty passionate and political views about America at home as well. You're listening to Al Letson Reveals. In this podcast, I just have a one-on-one interview with someone that I find interesting, and hopefully you will too. This interview was produced by Emily Harris and edited by Kevin Sullivan. Our sound design team is the Wonder Twins, my man Jay Breezy, Mr. Jim Briggs, and Claire C. Note Mullen. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.